If you're ready to confront your destiny, if this is the moment that you've been praying for, tune in and listen to your cosmic cheerleader, Commander Lady Athena, for cosmic pep talks for closet Christ. The show is the voice of the Ashtar Command. The call is for you to step forward into your greatness. Be listening on Wednesday. We have an appointment with destiny.
Greetings in the divine love of the Supreme Lord. I'm Commander Lady Athena, and you're listening to the voice of the Ashtar Command, Cosmic Pep Talks for Closet Christ. This evening, our seminar topic is prosperity, happiness, and peace. The prosperity, happiness, and peace in the world depends on the actions of the so-called great. Wow. So, if you're ready to look at this topic, take a deep breath and call your divine presence forward, integrating and infusing your personality, your mind, and every cell of your being. The soul essence, that which we call the divine consciousness, that aware part of us that's immortal, floods down into the DNA. When I say floods down, you have multiple subtle bodies that commutate and step down the energies of your supreme I Am God Self presence. It flows down through the nervous system, but before it reaches the nervous system, the consciousness is anchored in the pineal gland, which gives you the witness awareness, but the life stream itself comes from the I Am God presence directly into the heart and flows through the blood system. But also it penetrates every cell through the DNA. So literally every single part of your physical body and your brain and your nervous system is indwelt by the supreme consciousness we call God. So take a deep breath with that awareness and the intention to fire that divine awareness through every cell of your being. Deep breath. See the cells in your brain come alive. See the divine fohat, the divine electrical energy from the supreme I Am presence that you are. See it flood into the brain, firing all the divine consciousness to every cell of the brain. See the living water of Almighty God filling that 70 to 90% of the brain and the body that's made up of water. Water is God. You are an embodiment of the divine through and through. God has no other appearance in the tangible world of time, space, but through you. Amazing, isn't it? So, with that awareness, feel the energies that are coursing through your body now. Become aware of your active godhood. Amazing, isn't it? To come alive with that knowledge, that awareness? Wow. So, few it seems realize the connection between the behavior of the so-called great men and women. Women and men in society, its leaders and spokespersons, and the overall prosperity and happiness of the world. We have the administrative portion of leadership that keeps things practically rolling in harmony and cooperative endeavor, hopefully. And then we have the spiritual, which is the leadership always of the administrative. The two should work together in absolute harmony. Spiritual people are very much like doctors. They're physicians for the birth and death disease. And they prescribe the necessary medicine, which would be contemplation and meditation and the practice of the remembrance and presence of God. They are the ones that are responsible for giving the keys to living in ongoing peace and awareness and fellowship with all life. When they work hand in hand, as they always did in ancient times, with the administrative leadership, then you have a world that really works. The outer and the inner form a cohesive whole, and you see prosperity and happiness and peace throughout the world. But who's great? How do we define greatness today? Well, great is as great does. So it's by the actions, the fruit of the behavior and the actions and the presence of a person that reveals the heart. I often say that you can go on to LinkedIn to read a person in their professional capacity. But I said recently that it's on Twitter that the heart of a person is revealed. I think that probably is pretty accurate. So if you want to really know a person, maybe check out their LinkedIn profile and then check out their Twitter account, because you'll see there the inner and the outer. There was a worship song by the I Am group, Maranatha Singers, that kind of summed it up for me. And the lyric of the song went like this: if you want to be great in God's kingdom, learn to be the servant of all. Learn to be the servant of all. So our leadership, our politicians, first and foremost need to be servants of their constituents. They are there in a position of servitude, not to be vainglorious and lord it over everyone, but to discern the heart and the need of their country and their people, and to give their life into service of that first and foremost. For example, in ancient times, the monarch was responsible for the health, happiness, and well-being of their subjects. It was a great dishonor to the monarch if the subjects were suffering in any area of their realm. In fact, their word was their life, because it was sworn on their life, and they would kill themselves rather than go back on their word. And their word at that time was law. So they sacrificed every personal consideration in fulfilling their word. It's amazing to read some of the historical accounts of the great monarchs, how selfless they were, and how they modeled righteousness and righteous rule within their domains. The first human avatar, Lord Rama, in the Krita Yuga, or what is also called the Golden Age or the Satya Yuga, Lord Rama was the embodiment of pure righteousness, the righteous behavior of a king. So if you want to read the story of a perfectly righteous king and queen, Sita being his queen, read the Ramayana, preferably the one written by Satya Sai Baba, because it will tell you many things that he alone knows because he was Lord Rama. And then you have Lord Krishna, who was the monarch of the Dwapara Yuga, also called the Age of Silver. And he also was a great, great king that ruled with love and righteousness. The gopis, the cowherd maidens that play so much a role in his story, were actually reincarnations of great rishis. And they represented the behavior of the soul and the beloved. There was nothing sensual at all about the relationship with the gopis and Lord Krishna. And so in both of their kingdoms, there was not an iota of sadness because the glory of the Lord shone throughout. So the well-being of the people also depended upon the holy men and women of any given time, including this one, the God realized, and their living righteous lives according to Dharma, which is the Sanskrit word for behavior that's in accord with the soul or Atma. So, at one time, India was known for its great wealth and abundance. Riches and opulence were synonymous with the name of India. And that prevailed during the reign of the kings Rama and Krishna. Now, within the present age, the Kali Yuga, also known as the age of gross darkness, ignorance, and also it's called the Iron Age, you see the gradually declining of the quality of Dharma, righteousness. And with the decline, you have poverty, disease, crime, misery, and lack that takes over the whole world. Or selfishness and greed and immorality and discord and strife characterize the age of this gross darkness, the Iron Age of Kali. For those of you that are not familiar with the four ages, there are four ages that characterize four different states of consciousness, of life. And they take usually thousands of years to go through each cycle. We are now at the very end. In fact, I think we have entered the next age, which would be the Golden Age. I think we're just exiting now that age that we call the Kali Yuga. Sai Baba has said that it is not dependent upon a specific year so much as it's dependent upon the state of consciousness. And we've had a tremendous upgrading in consciousness since we have had the advent of the Lord Satya Sai Baba living in our midst and establishing a firm foundation for the establishment of the Golden Age. He created that firm foundation by, first of all, changing the hearts and the minds of people who allowed him to, who were open to him. Those of us who are his devotees definitely had our hearts changed. And then he established completely free education, everything from the very beginning preschool, nursery, or kindergarten, whatever you call it in your land, all the way through to the university levels, completely free. Room and board and education, free. free, and then began to extend that throughout India. And then he established a hospital, the first one being in Prashanti Nilayam in South India, where everything is free. The only thing the hospital does not have that other hospitals have is a billing section and an accountant, because no money is taken ever for anything. And the most advanced surgeries are being done there with the heart, the kidneys, eyes, and, well, every form of surgery. So much so that people often fly to India who are devotees. You don't have to be a devotee, but devotees will often fly to India to have their surgeries done in Sai Baba's super specialty hospital. And then he established many, many, many different service outreaches to teach all of his students how to be the servants of all, how to go forth and make all of the villages, one after another, hundreds of villages were adopted, where people were taught basic hygiene. They were gotten off of drugs and drinking. They were taught to repeat the names of the Lord, to sing holy songs. Some were taught to meditate. But all were taught of the essential divinity that indwells all of life and every human being. So there's a saying that service to man is service to God. But that is not the whole of it. It's only service to God when you're aware of the inherent divinity. It's only service to God when you're serving God as that person. When you're honoring the self-same spark of divinity that is resident in every heart. Only in that spirit can you say that service to man is service to God. So when we're taught to serve, when we're living in the realm of Satya Sai Baba, we are taught to be the servant of all. You will see all of the students, they don't have their heads high, vaingloriously. They keep their eyes before them on the ground as they walk. They don't look to the right or the left. They're dressed in pure white, and they go straight like an arrow to wherever they've been directed by Swami. And there they do selfless, humble service. They clean out. You know, high-class Brahmin students will be cleaning the waste matter out of the trenches, will be picking up garbage. So there's no division of caste. Everyone does the most humble service, not to the person, but to Swami, the Lord, who's dwelling in that person. And they offer the fruits of their action to God. So that is the very hallmark of what we're moving into when we speak about the Golden Age. We are moving into that. Now, the four ages are the called in Sanskrit, the Krita, Tretya, Dwapara, and Kali, yugas or ages. The Krita, or Satya, or Golden Age, is characterized by 100% Dharma. Everyone lives righteous lives. There's peace, prosperity, and absolute love throughout. The second age, the Tretya Yuga, which I said before was presided over by Krishna. That's not true. It's presided over by the quality of silver and Krishna. That age began to see a slight shift, little bit less Dharma. Dharma is represented by a bull standing on four legs. So in the first of the ages, you have the bull standing on four age. The second age, or silver age, or Tretya Yuga, you have the bull standing on four legs. The next age, or copper age, you have the bull standing on three legs, or not standing. Yeah, standing on three legs. And then the fourth, you have the bull standing only on one leg. So those of you who have seen the bull sitting in front of the Shiva Lingam in a Shiva temple, that is Nandi, the bull that represents righteousness. So you find that decline in the Kali Yuga, which is the age we're just coming out of. So we're still in that cycle where there's an overlapping, like when you turn the fan off, there's still a little bit of rotation of the blades. But Sai Baba has said that even though it appears that things are getting worse, in actuality, you're seeing the very final uprooting. Very final uprooting of that which has been heretofore hidden. And we're gradually moving into this golden age. Now you'll see it reflected in people. Jesus said of these times, let the good be good and let the evil be evil still. So you're seeing an kind of an increase in the nature of people. The good are getting better and the worse are getting worse. So to each his own. And this is a separation divinely ordained for the matriculation of souls to where they need to go for their next school of consciousness. You see, every planet is a school of consciousness. Every religion is a specific school for people that need that particular perspective. And so everybody is where they need to be because everything is very just in how it's arranged. So when we're speaking of the well-being of the world and its connection with the great and their behavior, we're referring to the whole world, to all people and all nations, not to just one nation, although the principle remains the same. So the world's happiness and prosperity depends upon the behavior of its great men and women, upon those who are God-conscious, and living lives governed by spiritual principles. These alone could be considered great. Obviously, we tend to accord greatness to, unfortunately, those who have the most notoriety, the most fame, and material accomplishments. And you know, of these individuals, they're really far from being great in the spiritual sense. So we tend to make heroes out of spiritual zeros. And most in this world have lost awareness of their innate divinity. So how can they possibly manifest any sort of authentic greatness? And greatness, you know, has nothing to do with how much money you have or the position or anything that you have achieved materially in the world. Some of the greatest souls outwardly looked like beggars, like, for example, Shirdi Sai Baba, Sai Baba's previous incarnation. Now, since he is entombed in Shirdi, the world flocks there, and he's doing more miracles than ever. But during his lifetime, very few people knew him. I was incarnated as a Brahmin boy at that time, and he was like my father. Wasn't my father, but was like my father, my spiritual father, definitely. But hardly anybody knew who he was. He looked like an old, ragged Muslim fakir, you know? Very simple how he lived. And yet Sai Baba said he was the king of the universe. So it's not by the outer that you can judge a person. Nothing to do with the outer. It's by the fruits of their action. The fruit of the godly is love, peace, joy, faithfulness, humility, self-control, loyalty, goodness, kindness, things of that nature show the nature of a godly person. The ungodly are known by creating strife, hatred, separation, discord, division, and all forms of uncleanliness, unclean speech. They look out at the world, they see unclean things. As within, so without. As above, so below. These people are not yet connected to the soul, which is the very embodiment of godliness. So learn to discern people by their fruit, of their action, by their behavior, by the alignment of what they say and what they do. When thought, word, and action become one, you have one who can manifest with a thought, like Satya Sai Baba does. So, we are coming out now of the Kali Yuga. The Kali Yuga actually started with the passing of Lord Krishna out of his physical form. Then you begin to see the decline of Dharma and the darkness encroaching upon the world. I believe, personally, this has never been said by Baba or any of the great devotees of Sai Baba, but when I was thinking of what to speak about tonight, it suddenly dropped into my mind that the beginning, real beginning, of the Golden Age started with the passing of Sai Baba out of his physical form, which was on April the 24th, 2011. And what Sai Baba did was, that was the time of the massive earthquake in Japan with the tsunami and the Fukushima nuclear reactor meltdown. He took the full brunt of that radioactivity into his body and sacrificed his life to save humanity. Because had that radioactivity hit our planet and population, it would have decimated, it would have destroyed all life for perhaps hundreds of years, for all we know. Now many people are still worried about the radioactivity leaking out, but you shouldn't worry, because the Ashtar Command, along with Sai Baba, who is very much working now omnipresently, without the limitation of the physical form, they're constantly neutralizing that as much as karma allows, because we have to be responsible for our creation. We have to make some changes on our planet. The Ashtar Command, for years, as well as every other extraterrestrial that has come to Earth and warned us, including Valiant Thor, the message is the same. We must absolutely abolish every form of nuclear fission. That's where you use that hot energy to create the explosion that produces harmful radioactivity. We must outlaw it and abolish it. And every form of warfare must be made illegal on our planet. If we don't do that, and we've been warned again and again and again since probably the late 40s, that if we don't do that, we're going to end up destroying the life on this planet, which is not going to be allowed, because it will mess up the solar system. And it will destroy that which man has no right to destroy. So, we have to abolish that. When we do, we will be able to have the technology of light, the free energy, the abolishment of all poverty, the abolishment of all disease, and the abolishment of the tyranny of the fossil fuel cartels, as well as the financial cartels. So we will not have the bondage of money and the things that have made our life a living hell. But only if we give up the proliferation of nuclear armaments and the buildup of the machinations that lead to warfare. We've got to abolish that. The sooner, the better. Because we're entering now into an age where those people that promote those things are not going to be able to survive. They're going to die out because the vibration will be too high for them to sustain their physical lives. This is a very, very serious subject. What can we do as light workers? Well, the first thing we can do is be godly. We can be the sadhus, the godly men and women of these times. How do you do that? Well, you realize that you're divine. You're not your mind. You're not your body. You're not the color of your skin. You're not your bank account. You're none of the things that you own or have done. You are an immortal, eternally pure, divine incarnation of the One Supreme Spirit. And you're to show up in the image and likeness of your Creator. Kind, loving, open, with peace, because when you're connected to the supreme peace of God, you show that forth in your countenance, in a world where almost everybody's face is contorted into one big worry, where there's no light shining through the skin, the eyes are dull, the face is dull, the voice is dull, the behavior is dull, because they haven't lit up within an awareness of their divinity. So be the lamplighters. Be the ones that go about and spark. You're all activators, just as I am. We activate what we are. We spread what we are. We radiate what we are. We're infectious. So be that divine contagion that spreads happiness wherever you go. Exemplify the virtues. Every good, virtuous thing is already within you, only masked by false identification or ego. That's all. Begin to correct yourself every time you think that you're less than holy. Every time you think you're less than God, every time you think that you're unworthy, correct that mind, because that's the ego. That's the false self. And it's only that liar, inner liar, that you have to keep redirecting to truth, to let your light shine. That's all. So, now that we're moving into this time, we're going to see for a while a great clashing of these two mindsets. The one that is totally greed-driven, commerce-driven, profit-driven, commercialism-driven, corporate-driven. You know, that whole mechanism that we have created, God only knows why. When we move out of that and we begin to move into the realm of cooperative endeavor, sharing, community, not the, where we all have to live under the same roof or in the same commune, but a sense of community where we believe that we're global citizens, we're universal citizens, that the world belongs to us and we belong to the world, that the world is our child, the world is our responsibility. That kind of feeling, the sense of kinship with people when you interact with people, regardless of race, creed, color, status in society, belief system, where you begin to feel that sense of kinship with everyone. That's how we're moving now into this new energy. We join hands, we link arms, and we march together in the light of the One Supreme Spirit. Doing good works, bringing in new ideas, wherever we are, expanding the possibilities, whether we just still have to think it inwardly, it doesn't matter. Your thoughts also communicate. You build a cloud of possibilities in your thought field, which then joins with other people who are thinking and meditating and thinking along those lines as well. And pretty soon you have a community that is transcendental to anything going on in the world, and then it precipitates down into these new inventions. We're all connected. We're all linked. So that's how we can do it. We can be it within and express it as much as we possibly can without being offensive, without trying to coerce and force everybody to think as we do. But we share the light and the love and the goodwill and the fellowship, which makes any person extremely attractive. So if you want to win friends and influence people, be that. Be kind. Be caring. Be loving. Be thoughtful. And train that lower nature that doesn't want to do any of those things to shape up. You know, to shape up. So, in each of these four ages that we've spoken about, the Lord will take birth as a divine incarnation or avatar to protect the righteous and to uproot and destroy the evils of the times and the evildoers. But Sai Baba said, in this age, everyone has been tainted with ego and evil. Therefore, if he decides to uproot, who's going to survive? So he came to change us from within. Last week, I spoke about the visionaries who were getting messages from Mother Mary, the different places throughout the world. And some of the Marian visionaries were told by Mother Mary that the 20th century was given over to Satan for him to do his utmost to test, tempt, and try in all possible ways to defeat and destroy humanity. Why? Well, because God was certain that humanity was going to move in the Godward path, but they were so lost in darkness that they were not awakening. So they were allowed, he was allowed that century to shake them up and to, you know, get their attention. And truly, no century equals the 20th century in the amount of bloodshed, devastation, wanton evil, the things that were, the horrors that were unleashed in the 20th century go beyond anything that's ever happened before. So without the advent of the Kali Yuga avatars of Shirdi Sai Baba and Satya Sai Baba, the world would not have survived. Shirdi Sai Baba was born in northern India, just at the time of the outbreak of, or prior to the outbreak of the First World War, I believe. And Satya Sai Baba was born prior to the outbreak of the Second World War. It occurred to me, from what I've been studying of prophecy of all the different nations and religious prophets and so forth, that 1939 to 1945 was 7 years, which very likely was the Great Armageddon, according to many prophetic sources. Very interesting. Anyway, I told you how Sai Baba took on the effects of the Fukushima radioactive meltdown in Japan. Now he is working very, very actively, omnipresently throughout the world, unhampered by the physical body, but more active than ever. There's been more appearances, more miracles, and various manifestations than even when he was in his physical body. It's like they have just multiplied tremendously. So Sai Baba had said originally when he came that he had come to avert the crisis that had come upon humanity. And I believe that nuclear meltdown was indeed the crisis. He also said in 1980s that it was the devotees of the Lord not only that had caused his advent to come forward, but also that had averted many of the catastrophes which were meant to have befallen humanity. Mother Mary, when she gave her messages to the various visionaries, said that there were many, many disasters that had, each one were dreadful, and they had been greatly mitigated and toned down by the fasting and the prayer of the faithful throughout the world who listened to the visionaries and took to heart what Mother Mary was saying about you need to repent, you need to turn your mind Godward, you need to say, ask forgiveness for your sins, you need to live virtuous, godly lives, you need to return to God and a life of virtue and righteousness. And so many, many people did. And as a result, I guess many of those things that were foretold to happen were averted. Pope John Paul II, in one of the prophecies, it looked like he was going to be assassinated. But you see, he was such a godly man and had completely surrendered his life to the Divine Mother that when the assassin came forward, the bullet that hit him just missed all of his vital organs. And he had a flashing of the Virgin Mary in a vision as that was happening. And he knew that she had stepped forward to avert that prophecy from happening. He was a man of great virtue and prayer. There's an amazing story of a group of priests that lived very close to the zero point in Hiroshima, I believe it was, in Japan when the bomb was dropped. And those 18 men were the only ones within miles of radius where everything was completely destroyed. They were not touched. Why? Because they said, you know, one of them that was still living that was interviewed some years back, he said, well, we're just ordinary monks. We're not extraordinary in any way, except we always said the rosary. We had great devotion to Mother Mary, and we always said the rosary every day. And you see, the grace of the Mother protected them, and not a hair on their head was harmed. So Sai Baba said it will be like that, that not a hair on the head of the truly righteous, godly people, the devotees of the Lord, will be harmed, regardless of what happens on the planet. Does that mean that you won't die if there's some catastrophe? Only if it's your time to die, only if you've agreed that this is your time to exit the body. But otherwise, you'll be lifted, just as I have been many, many times in my life, where the timeline is shifted and adjusted to where you're not there at the epicenter of the earthquake. Or if you are, as I was in a couple cases, the divine puts you kind of in a different zone. Now, you know, when the earthquake hits, so you're not impacted by it. There's just many things that happen. So if you live God-focused and God-oriented, you see, many, many things bypass you. It says in the Bible, only from a distance will the righteous see or observe the recompense of the wicked. Only from a distance. That could mean, you know, watching on our TV. But the point is, it's time to live our godliness out loud and to be leaders in virtue. Leaders by example, leaders by the light in which we walk, in which we stand, in which we truly are radiating our own inner divine essence. Then you're going to see some amazing things, because we have each elbowed and pleaded and prayed and done whatever we could do to get born at this time, to get born at this time. Now, with the advent of the Golden Age, we will have the presence of Sai Baba's third and probably last incarnation on this planet, since he is a gift from the cosmos. He's not a person that comes originally from Earth. He comes from out of the system, from another place entirely in the cosmos. And so he's not under the earthly karma. And you can't look at him as you would an ascended master that's part of the physical earthly hierarchy. He comes in as a gift of grace, as an insert of divine intervention. And so he's not bound by any of the laws or any of those things that govern most masters. So he will come as Prema Sai Baba, but apparently not as a religious leader. Because then it would just be a matter of people following another guru. He doesn't want that. Prema Sai Baba will teach one thing, that you are God. Prema Sai Baba apparently will live a quiet householder life. He will marry and have a son. I don't even know if he will be out in terms of where people would say, oh, there's Prema Sai Baba. I don't know. We don't know. So it's a mystery. But what we do know is he's not going to be coercing followers or enticing people in any way to follow him, but to stand in their own divinity. Also, the golden age will be fully established before he advents, because the job of establishing the golden age on a firm footing and foundation was for Sai Baba, who came to correct the evil, to correct that by correcting the mind, which is the host of evil, the ego mind. He came to correct that from within, which he's been doing and continues to do. But Prema Sai, it will be a different atmosphere. It will be an atmosphere of complete peace and love throughout the earth with no vestige of crime anywhere. So obviously we're shifting into a very, very different dimension of life. And it's very, very interesting. We have also the world teacher, the Lord Maitreya, who overshadowed and worked as one with the Lord Jesus during his incarnation. You might say he was the overlighting divine presence that worked through the Master Jesus. They worked as one. They're often seen together, as I've seen them many, many times. They work together. They are as one, and yet they're separate individuals at the same time. As I've told you before, he has been living in the area of London, East London, since 1977, when he came from his abode in the Himalayas by plane and entered India through Pakistan. Now, he will be, has been, actually, not will be, he has been seen on television, on major news networks, both in the United States and also a few in Europe, but not as he is by name. Nobody knows who he is. So our task, yours and mine, is to keep our eyes open and to watch for a young, oh, 30-something, 35 in appearance probably, like most of the masters, Asian man, nice-looking, very nice-looking, but, you know, Asian man, that has an extraordinarily sane, grounded, yet spiritual, and global worldview that will be on television. Who knows where? Who knows when? Nobody knows. But what's going to tip us off is the energy coming through him and his presence and the words of very simple wisdom on how we can correct certain global issues, which obviously are out of our hands in most cases. We don't know what to do to bring the world into unity. But that's his job. He's called the World Uniter. So he is the same individual that has been prophesied by all of the world religions under a variety of names. But he's the coming one that everyone's been expecting. And it will be his job to be on the earth and kind of supervising his disciples, which are called the Masters of Wisdom, that are already adventing. Eventually there will be 40 living in the outer world with their ashrams and schools where you can go in and have conscious initiation, conscious ascension, conscious teachings with these masters who will be well known, because there will be no need for them to hide. They'll be living openly in society. Now there's about 15 or so that are out. I have met the Master Jesus. I have met the Lord Maitreya. Those are the only two that I am conscious of seeing. But the disciples that were around Jesus during his lifetime are all masters now, and they're all living in the outer world, so far as I know. And there's more coming that we don't know about, that we have not learned their names, but they're also part of the disciples of the Lord, of the Christ, who is the teacher alike of angels and of men and of masters. There's the Christ. So we're going to have this great personage, this great world uniter, world teacher, also known by his correct name in the Buddhist tradition, where he's known as the Buddha Maitreya. And that's his correct name. And it's going to be an incredible age. When? Well, according to Sai Baba, we've been gradually moving towards this golden age since, he said since about 200 years with the advent of Shri Sai Baba. That's what he told me inwardly. But Sai Baba said the golden age actually started in the year 2000 as the age of love. And then, of course, we were all shocked when 9/11 happened. It's like we couldn't believe it. So what happened? Well, I don't know. People make choices. Leaders make choices. And sometimes very bad ones that lead to very bad consequences. And I think that's what happened. Sai Baba said there was karma between the Bush family and the family of Saddam Hussein and Saddam Hussein. So it was kind of like a family argument that got out of hand and became a horrible war. But that said, we're still moving into the golden age, which should be an evidence to where we could actually say, oh, wow, we're in the golden age by 2024, is my understanding from the years and dates Sai Baba has shared with other devotees and also in his writing. So I think we can really look at it big time as coming more and more in evidence here and there through those of us who have shifted our consciousness. But ultimately, it's going to spread to more and more people, and you're going to see the exiting of many souls that, as I said, can't hold those higher vibrations. Sai Baba said that only those souls firmly rooted in devotion will withstand the winds of change, that all the rest will be swept away into a world of chaos, like chaff. So firmly root yourself in devotion, in selfless service, in humility, in prayerfulness. If you can meditate, meditate. If you can't meditate, then serve people as God and offer the fruit of your service to God. That makes you a karma yogi, which is doing desireless action. And then just do the best you can to live a godly life. If you can meditate, if you can come into divine consciousness in any degree of self-realization, Sai Baba said you needn't do anything else at all. That's the most important thing that you can do for humanity, is to live a God-realized, self-realized life. But for some people, that's down the road a ways because they haven't built a place for that level of consciousness to dawn on them yet. But if you're one of those rare ones who can meditate and devote your life to contemplation and meditation and prayer, or prayer and fasting, as Mother Mary suggested to the visionaries, then you can do a tremendous amount to shift the world and the world's vibration and state into one of prosperity and peacefulness. We cannot prosper if we're selfish and greedy. Ill-gotten gains are always lost. So these great, great wealthy people that think they're so vainglorious and great and fantastic now are actually paupers in spirit, because they cannot take a cent with them when they pass out of the body, and they will have amassed a tremendous amount of karma, so that when they come back, which they're going to have to, they're going to have to really be working, and probably some very, very humble capacities to atone for the lives of excess and wanton luxury, you know, at the expense of others, where others are harmed in the process of your amassing your wealth. It's a bad karma. So live within your means. Sai Baba says to live within your means, live simply, be happy with what you have, because you have exactly what you've earned and what you deserve. People that have won the lottery and so forth, they're using up an awful lot of good karma, or light points, as J.R. used to call them. They're using up a lot of their merit, so don't envy them. But they're having that great wealth come to them because they earned it in some lifetime. And very often they haven't prepared any way to receive or benefit from that wealth, so they lose it and they're worse off than before they won the lottery. So don't be silly and wish for things that are just silly, just silliness. Be happy with what you have. Make the best of it. Be grateful for it. But most of all, build up your treasure, as Jesus taught us, where rust and moth and thieves cannot take it from you. Build up your currency as merit, as kingdom merit. And the most precious thing you can have is a personality that is inclined to the godly things of life. That is also the result of previous merit in other lifetimes. To be in the company of the truly great and godly individuals is your good karma. To even hear about Sai Baba, oh my gosh, you have to have tremendous karma. Even good karma, good merit, to even listen to me talking about these things. I'll bet there are many people that cannot, no matter how they try, listen to this particular broadcast. I'll just bet. I have seen that drama played out so many times with people trying to see Sai Baba. They were in India, they were close to his ashram, but they could not get to him to where they could see him and have his darshan. I was part of that many, many times with people who would come to me and ask me to take them on the train or take them by taxi so they could see Sai Baba. He would just evade them. They did not have the karma to see him. They did not have the merit. It was not their destiny. So you can't get into the company of a godly person unless you have really, really good merit. So build up that merit through good works, through godly works, through a holy consciousness. The very, very last message that John Roger, often called J.R., who was my personal mentor for most of my lifetime, actually, the last thing he posted on Facebook before he passed away was, be good, be holy. And I don't think a more profound message could be given to any one of us. Be good, be holy. And when you do that, you don't have a thing to worry about. Be as simple as a kitten, as a child, giving everything over to the care and keeping of the Lord. You don't have to know a lot of metaphysical stuff. You don't have to know all the scriptures and all this and all that. Be simple. Be like a little flower that loves to turn its face to the light of the sun and give forth its perfume to any and all without hesitation. Be like that. And that is a life that is truly great. It will shine like a star in the heart of God forevermore. So I hope this has been helpful for you. It's a simple message. Be good. Be holy. And give glory to your Maker, that whoever sees you may be reminded that God is, because you are the visible representation of divine glory. So let's go out chanting Anai Hu. Deep breath. Anai Hu. Blessings and grace to each one of you. And let's raise our hands and send blessings and grace and light to every single man, woman, child, kingdom of nature, every sentient being, to all the devas and angels of earth, wind, fire, and water, and to beautiful Mother Earth, Bhumata, that send her love and light, Bhumi, Gaia. And we bless her, and we bless all of our brothers and sisters that they may awaken to the love that is their true nature. Namaste.